Prime ministers
and presidents
may come and go, but the certainty of exemplary entertainment on the Midweek Drive
and the Midweek Drive Morning Edition
remains.
Sexton Blake, Doctor Who, the Solaris Book of New Fantasy, a whole heap of other goodies, and indeed Broken Things coming up as well. It can only be that awesome extravaganza who's basically been missing from the Midweek Drive for far, far, far too long. One of the Stone Tapes alumni, it's George Mann. How are you, George?
I'm very well, thank you. It was a great introduction. Thank you.
Well, it's only right. This is basically it. I mean, we've just done a show with Robin Pierce, our regular weekly Resonance Rewind. And I feel, you know, just as obviously spin-off series occur, I mean, you know, Sam Stone and David Howe, they're probably sort of seeing their siblings as fledglings fly away, creating all sorts of magical things. I'm sure they'll come back. Back with us, of course, as well for another wonderful contribution from North Carolina. Yes, United States of America. It's Jessica Butters. How are you, Jessica?
Good. How are you all?
Well, we're okay, Jessica. Since a matter of ago, when on another show we were considering Kolchak the Night Stalker, which actually finished before George was even born. But have you seen Kolchak the Night Stalker, George?
I have indeed. I've got the book set.
Now, well, I think in which case we've got a few moments before we go into some of your own creativity to actually say, can you remember the episode entitled Mr. R-I-N-G?
I can't say that I do.
All about the robot that effectively killed its maker.
Yes.
Just prompt those Frankenstein illusions.
It's been a long time since I watched them, I will say that.
It all comes together. Well, I think it's first. I mean, it was the first time Jessica had ever watched the episode, and not only Jessica, but the whole Burtis family have become Kolchakers, basically, from that point of view. As I'm sure refer to fans of Kolchak. Did you like the series, George? Did you think it was good? Did you think it could have gone on for longer? Or is it a case of, he's never going to go away and one day I will write some Kolchak graphic narratives?
Oh, I think he's got to come back. I think he's overdue, actually, a new kind of remake and a redevelopment. I don't know. He's one of the kind of those classic supernatural detectives from you know, the era where they were really starting to flourish. So I think, yeah, he's been an influence, I think, and he needs to come back.
He will return. Yeah. Excellent. Jessica, you've had a little look at some of George's magnificent stuff, etc. You can open up the questioning because I suspect that Phil Lynas has been captured by, in his own words, the jackhammers of Los Angeles. I would actually say they're pneumatic drills, but I realise there's a lost in translation thing. Strangely enough, just as I actually say that, he may well actually be coming along. But anyway, enough of such stuff. I know. It's magical. It's like radio, but with visual techniques as well. It's phenomenal. And here he is, visual technique extraordinaire, Phil Lynas. How are you, Phil?
I barely heard the last part of the introduction. I trust that it was eloquent, it was romantic, it was mysterious.
Of course.
Thank you, Jessica. This is it. Because, of course, we haven't actually alluded to the fact that when, of course, you first encountered Phil Lynas, it was obviously a radio link to radio link from Siren Studio to, obviously, the Los Angeles area. Then, of course, for many a time, it was just finding out where that button for the camera was on your Zoom facility. But, you know, it's okay.
I finally found it.
We go for that. And of course, since then, we've already sort of had the invitation for Phil and Lily to come and visit you in North Carolina. It was refused, politely, but what the heck. And my other line, Phil, which was, why do you refer to these jackhammers not as pneumatic drills? Because surely that's pneumatic drills, not jackhammers.
That is true, though I will admit, I think I was maybe in my 30s before I realized, based on a Jam song lyric, that's what pneumatic drills meant, right? Really? Town Called Malice. Town Called Malice.
Exactly. Seamlessly put together. So anyway, Jessica, start the quizzing. Yes, Phil.
Well, I just want to pay compliments to Jessica where compliments are due. It may have taken her a long time to figure out the video button, but look, she always has beautiful lighting on her. I still haven't figured out how to look like I'm not in witness relocation. So
I'm the same.
Yeah, but, it's yeah. Like you've got lovely view of my kitchen, but I'm like, I'm cast in shadow, but that's good because it matches my mood.
It makes Please. It mysterious.
Yes, but look at her, bling, bling. All right.
That works so well on radio. Honestly, if Louis Savvy manages to find a Wi-Fi connection in Germany, I know it's a tough call. He might well join us as well. Maybe he'll have something there. He's over in Germany doing sci-fi on tour, basically. Sci-fi London on tour in Germany. Anyway, Jessica, what was your question for George?
Hi, George. So I was actually reading about you, and it says that you're a consultant editor for a lot of different science fiction projects. And I was actually wondering, did you ever see yourself kind of going into this field when you were young? Was this something that you always wanted to do, or was it like a random happening that turned into a happy accident?
Good question. I always wanted to write. So even when I was a little kid, I used to get like pieces of paper and fold them together to make books and like do my own little illustrated books about cavemen and things. And my brother's still got one of them and he uses it to embarrass me frequently. basically what happened was we have a thing in the UK where we do work experience. So when you're in that kind of high school age, you go on a work placement for two weeks with a business that's agreed to have you, and you get a bit of experience what it's like working. And I went to a bookshop because I was a voracious reader, and they offered me a job at the end of it. They said, well, you know, we need someone to come and stack shelves, and you've done a good job, so we can, you know, Saturday job, you can come in on a Saturday and stack shelves. So I did, and everything kind of went from there, really, because that was at that formative age of about kind of 15, and I thought, this is what I want to do. I want to work with books.
Yeah.
So I spent, I think it was about 11 years working in bookshops, eventually managing my own bookstores, but also writing at the same time. I was kind of trying to progress that love of writing, and had my first small press books published while I was in the bookshop. And then from that, I thought, right, well, the next step has got to be publishing. I need to go and see what's behind the other curtain. I managed to get a job working for Games Workshop doing kind of science fiction publishing. And that's where I started kind of doing my editorial side of things and still writing. And then did that for another 10 years or so. And then my writing career was building to a point where I was able to go, right, well, now I've done publishing and I've done book selling, so I know what it's like on the other side of the fence. I'm going to go and sit behind a desk for the rest of my life and write books and comics. And that's what I'm trying to do at the moment.
and very successfully, George, because let's face it, you've been to the San Diego Comic Con, both in person and virtually. You've been DC Universes. How are things going with the DC Universe and yourself, George? All well?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still reading a lot of DC stuff. They seem to have gone through a kind of period of reorganization and upheaval recently at DC with...
Well, they just sacked basically half the staff. I mean, that's by the by. You know, you're still around.
I was trying to frame it subtly, but yeah, that's pretty much what's happened. I think Warner Brothers have had a big restructure, and they've lost their management team, or some of the management team. They've lost quite a few editors, and they're rationalising the range. So we're waiting to see what happens on the other side of that, really, and what comes out. Whether they hang on to the you know, a big publishing program, whether it's going to be a reduced publishing program, we don't know. Well, but I think there's still lots of TV and film to come as well.
Fundamentally, if Jim Lee decides to actually call it a day, then I think, George, you should take over. That's all I'm saying. You
know, I wish. We'll see. One day.
Well, we're already talking about one of your projects, I think, being optioned for animation.
Yeah, so Ghosts of Manhattan, these series of books.
That's what we like to see. You see, you can actually sort of provide that clue there. Ghosts of Manhattan in process, and there's going to be an animated series.
Yeah, so this is really exciting. This the powerhouse animation of the people behind Castlevania for Netflix, which has been a big hit. And they are going to be animating the Ghosts of Manhattan. We've got a showrunner called Aaron Waltke, who has worked on Star Trek and Troll Hunters. And Legion M, who are the production company behind it all, who are one of the kind of, they're really interesting, actually. They're like a crowdfunded production company. So they sell shares to just fans like you and me. And that's how they fund their investments.
It's an awesome narrative. Let's bring on board Phil Leonis again more formally, because clearly I think as the sort of shows have developed over the years, although you've been a regular on the Stone Tapes and so on, you've never actually kind of really shared much airtime with our ace director, seeker of the truth, and general all-round wonderful soul in California. So here we are. Phil, chance to throw a few questions at George.
Well, yes, I appreciate the opportunity because I think my original role very much on this show was as an American correspondent, cultural correspondent, in some ways translating from your English into our English what is being discussed. For example, I would point out that when George was referring to work experience, here in America, those two words are a contradiction in terms. I would also, right, America would have an obvious follow-up question. George, what are bookstores? But I would like to point out that the specific question that Jessica asked, George, was, did you see yourself getting into science fiction?
Oh,
I think what she was asking was, did you have an out-of-body experience where you literally saw yourself working in science fiction, which would make a great science fiction story. But I am interested in doubling back to that in all seriousness, because you talked about the path, the inspirational path that led you to where you are. But did you find in getting into the science fiction that you were connecting again with maybe some of your dreams and your passions of youth that had spurred you on to begin with?
That's a really good question. I'm sorry for giving a politician's answer before. Yeah. no, I absolutely did. Yeah. It came out of, I think it was more about desire. In terms of wanting to do what I enjoyed reading, basically, I grew up watching things like Doctor Who and kind of lots of British science fiction and fantasy, but reading from a very young age, Sherlock Holmes, I read the complete canon at the age of 13, but then War of the Worlds, started
Sexton
reading
Blake,
yeah, James Herbert and Stephen King. The Dragonlance Chronicles, big fantasy books based on the Dungeons and Dragons worlds. And it just spiraled and spiraled. And by the time I really started wanting to write, I was reading big science fiction blockbusters, really. Peter F. Hamilton, Alistair Reynolds, Ian Banks, people like that. And that's what I wanted to emulate at first. It was a mistake to try and emulate those people rather than try and find my own voice. That was one of the things that one of the learning experiences I had to go through was that actually I needed to be true to myself and be creative and not actually go after what I thought might be commercial or that I thought was exciting for me as a reader. My first experience of trying to write a novel was very much that I'd kind of get seven or eight chapters in and the whole thing would collapse. And I start again and I get seven or eight chapters in and the whole thing would collapse again. It's because I didn't really know where I was going and I was trying to write these big sprawling space operas. And I almost gave up for that.
I think in almost every form, at least in terms of writing, if we are trying to impose our ideas upon what we're writing rather than telling a story that is flowing through us, and this is why, even in terms of making movies, you know, I remember once I made a film and I said, oh, this is a movie that I would really enjoy watching. And someone said, well, don't you want to watch all your movies? And I would say, no, I don't make the movies I want to watch. I make the movies that it is me to make.
Right.
And occasionally that will be the same thing. But no, you get to that point where, yeah, you think, I'm going to emulate the people who make the stuff that I love. But then, no, that love of it was to introduce you to different concepts of artistry, of creativity. But you do have to follow your own unique voice. And there are times when it does dovetail nicely back with that joy of youth.
Yeah, I think you put it very eloquently there. And that was definitely the experience that I went through. So yeah, to answer the question, really, I suppose I always saw myself as when I was younger, as this, you know, wanting to be this science fiction writer. I think what I ended up doing was not really writing science fiction. Very little of what I've written is actually what you'd call science fiction. And it's certainly not those big sprawling space operas that I still love to read. It's much more kind of more fantasy, I suppose.
Although it's fair to say that, you know, Doctor Who has a certain amount of hardcore science fiction involved with the whole process.
Elements
of it. As we start talking about science fiction, who should join us all the way from Germany? Jawohl, mein Herr! It's Louis Savvy! Louis, the genius behind Sci-Fi London and many, many wonderful things. Used to, of course, program the films for Sci-Fi Weekender back in the day. Louis, guten Abend, sir! Oh, the Vulcan salute as well!
Sorry, I'm late. I've just got to my hotel, so it's all a bit. It's raining like buggery here, so I do apologise. Hear me, though.
It's regnant. It's regnant. It's raining. That's the key thing. We could hear you, Louis. You seem to have frozen in mid system, but we're there. It's all going to go well. Now, I think you certainly know Phil Leonis, because Louis, let's face it, without you, Phil Leonis would never have been on the Midweek Drive.
Sorry, Phil.
Oh my goodness. Yes, it's true. I was delivering your favorite See's candy to you, and the next thing I know, this strange man's shoving a microphone in my face.
He does that a lot. And I finished. Oh, but I got the candies. How are you?
I think
That's
you asked.
That's a weirdness there.
Oh,
that
it's so weird.
Line.
You've got a terrible line. I don't know if you can hear us, but it's wonderful to get to see you. It is a physical relief to get to see my friend Louis Savvy after too long.
And Louis, have you encountered George Mann before? I know you haven't met Jessica Burtis, although I think you might have spoken telephonically on that side of things. George, of course, who, as we've just been saying, lots of great stuff there. In fact, we're also going to be talking about the whole notion of broken things. George, tell us about broken things.
Broken thing. This is actually a novella that I wrote during lockdown. So I had this window, chasm of a window opened up in my schedule when we first went into lockdown and lots of projects went on hiatus, which I'm sure happened to a lot of us, where people were just a little bit nervous, a little bit tentative about, you know, are we still going to be able to publish these things at the times we've planned? Are we still going to have the money? Are we still going to have jobs? So things went on hold, and I thought, here's an opportunity to write a novella, to keep myself busy as much as anything, but also something that was just purely for me. It's a little bit like we were just talking about, it kind of something that I didn't have a destination in mind. I didn't have a plan for it to be published in any big way at the time. It was more write something for me. And it's a out and out fantasy story, more so than anything I've ever done. Usually I kind of do historical fantasy. This is just an out and out second world fantasy story, very much inspired by writers like Stephen Erickson. It just came over the course of a couple of weeks. The whole thing just came together. And
Bottom line, George, I mean, if Phil Leonis is actually looking for taking out an option on it, I think he should get in there fairly quickly to get Broken Things actually signed up for that. Option should be taken. But talking about movies and films, etc., Louis, hopefully the link will actually connect with us. Why are you in Berlin? Is it Berlin or is it just, have I got that completely wrong? Are you just in Germany?
No, I'm in Germany. I'm in a town called Halle. Which is about 20, 30 miles north of Leipzig. And it's a fantastic festival I've been involved with for about 5 years, if you can still hear me.
Yes.
Maybe 4 years, called Silver Sorts Festival. And it's in the city of Halle. It normally runs in June, but because obviously of lockdown, we did a small virtual version in June. But everyone decided, I'm on the board of advisors, and it's a free to the public science festival, and a 2-day full conference on science communication. And we invite scientists from all over the world, and they basically do a gong show. They've got 2 minutes to pitch their idea for a science documentary to the top TV execs from around the world. So we have the BBC and Sky and RTE and PBS and so on. They all come to this little town And for 2 days, we just crunch through, and really is done on the gong. They get 2 minutes, they get up on stage, and they have to pitch their documentary about algae or whatever it is, you know, or marsupials or whatever it's about. And it's fantastic. And alongside that, we have film screenings, performance art, installations, workshops, a whole load of stuff for kids and schools. And it normally lasts 4 or 5 days. So we're doing it in October. It's very rainy, but we have a pop-up cinema. We have a Gothic cathedral in Halle where we're holding a lot of our science exhibitions. And then almost opposite that, we have an abandoned department store, which is a little bit like a Debenhams, and we're turning it into a bar and a gallery and a pop-up cinema. So there we are.
You see, you had me, Louis, when you said algae and marsupials. I mean, I think on that basis alone, you know, Skippy the bush kangaroo with algae, it's got to happen, you know? It's got to be a sort of mashup that's there.
There's a fantastic documentary called The Blob, which should have been at my festival this year. It's fantastic. And it actually opens with the Steve McQueen credits and titles. And it's about algae. It's about slime mold, in fact. And about how smart this is. And it's a fabulous, fabulous film. It's very funny. And slime mold is super, super stuff. It's incredible.
It was great for Ghostbusters. It helped the whole series develop from Slimer being slimed. I mean, presumably, yeah, I mean, you got The Blob, yeah. You got Das Blob, Der Blob, you've got all sorts of things there. Who would have thought, actually, Louis, that you'd be having such fun in a place which 40 years ago was occupied by the Stasi? Never mind, it's all good.
Exactly. Well, they're still here, I think. I don't know if they've moved on necessarily. But, oh,
they're not here. No. I think
it's my mom.
I think actually they're not all there. I think many of them are here in America.
Yeah, fair point, Phil. Anyway,
yeah, that's fine.
Moving on, yeah. Phil.
So, tomorrow night. I was just going to say, yeah, tomorrow night, for instance, I'm talking to a very. A world-leading, and obviously I can't remember his name now, epidemiologist about plagues and pandemics. And we're doing that at midnight after we've screened a South Korean zombie comedy called The Odd Family. And the scientists we get are absolutely fantastic because we'll be there till probably 2 a.m, just talking absolute rubbish about zombie plagues with a... Yes. Leading epidemiology.
Clearly, Louis, if we were doing this in Britain, we wouldn't be allowed to unless you're part of the government and claiming you needed to have an eye test by actually driving your car. What's the situation in terms of Germany? Has it been a case of, well, what is this pandemic? You know, have they moved on from that? Are they all happy, or is it a case
no.
of whatever?
No, it's very much the same as the UK. It's masks everywhere. Masks in all the shops. In fact, a lot of people are wearing masks in the streets. You know, same old stuff. Hand sanitizer everywhere. You know, social distancing, and so on. What we've done with the cinema is actually the cinema has got huge circles painted on the floor, which you can sit six chairs in, and they're far enough away from the next circle to be socially distant. So if you're with friends or in your own bubble, then you can go and sit together. You can take your chairs and sit together in that one bubble. And if there's just two of you, then you know you're all socially distanced in this derelict department store. It's very George Romero for sure.
Alex, I would love to hear from Louis what the plans are for 2021 Sci-Fi London.
Prayer.
I'd like to know what they are as well. If anyone can help. In fact, in July, we were planning to try and run something in October, the end of October. And sadly, the cinemas we use are owned by Cineworld. So that's all gone out the window. And in fact, our cinema, the one that we really like to use in Stratford, that I've got gut feeling they won't reopen, to be honest. because it is a small neighbourhood cinema. So at the moment, we've got a very loose plan of perhaps doing something online, because we don't want to see the films we've got to waste. We are doing some touring with it, so like we're doing here. I'm just putting a programme together for China, to go out to a festival that we work with there. And fingers crossed, we'll be looking at sort of mid-year, May, June next year, for Sci-Fi London. Whether that's officially the 20th or it's our 21st, I don't know. We'll pick which is the most important birthday, I think.
It's curious, Louis, that you're over there sorting that through, and then another one of your fantastic alumni, the Louis Savvy recommendations, of course, Ilana Rain is running a zombie conference and zombie apocalypse time. Great.
Channel Z.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Because I'm going to preempt you. So we have a mutual friend in Brighton, as you know, a Canadian friend, and he has been for the last 2 years, in fact, asking me, what do you know about that film? And when is that film coming? So I'm not going to push you or say more about it, name it, but just so you know,
well,
if he gets to hear this, I've my part of it.
Okay, so two things. One, that film you're referring to was aiming to be done for this year. We had the posters already with the ad line, hindsight is 2020. And so we'll hold it for whenever we're gonna have Sci-Fi London, but I feel that it should be called Sci-Fi London 20/21, because it's in 2021.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good idea.
George,
we'd like to see that, and you guys back again as well. Although Dean's in Australia, right?
No, it's far worse than that. He's moved to Detroit.
Get with the program, Louis. He left Australia years ago. You know, he moved into the Windy City. Oh no, that's Chicago.
Not Windy City. Not the city of brotherly love. It's Detroit, which somehow brings us back to the zombie apocalypse.
So, George,
it's full circle.
Exactly, no. George. Any questions you'd like to put to either Phil, Louis, or Jessica?
Oh, blimey! So, well, I'm interested to hear more about this film. What is the film?
Yeah, it was a very interesting teaser trailer that Louis and Phil managed to combine between themselves there. Get a dodgy low bandwidth Zoom connection and actually just release one or two words that people can make out.
Are you allowed to talk about this film?
I think that's a possibility maybe from Louis there, Phil.
this film I can talk about. The one that Dean and I are writing, Louis, right now, we've been hired to write, I can't talk about, though it's a remake, it's both a remake and a sequel of a famous 70s movie, but I can't talk about it, though if you were to ask me off the record, did Anthony Hopkins ever play a magician in a horror film? I would say yes. Anyway, the one that Louis is referencing is a sequel to a documentary that we made that came out, premiered at Sci-Fi London in 2011, called The Truth Is Out There, about conspiracy theories, consciousness, and comedy. And we're doing a long-awaited, long-anticipated sequel, the third act to which keeps getting rewritten by history, as it turns out. But the pandemic and everything that has come to a head this year seems to make for the perfect third act, and really drill down into the question that motivated us when we started the first one back in 2008, I think, is when we started it, which is what does it mean to search for the truth in a world where there's such violent disagreement And where everywhere you look, you will either find seemingly conspiracies or conspiracy theories. What does it mean to even search for the truth in that world anymore? And interestingly, the sequel is proving to be very poetic, very lyrical, very uplifting. And so I'm excited to finally get it out to people.
Sounds great.
It will be awesome. It will. I know that because I've seen The Truth Is Out There. It's how we kind of got together via Louis, of course, and indirectly the late, great David Hedison. But anyway, in terms of the travels of Phil Lynas, I'm just looking at his schedule. Next week, in theory, you will be in Turlock. Where on in God's green earth is Turlock?
That is where I've been all summer, taking care of my family and family business. And it is, where is it? It's conveniently located between the summit of man's knowledge and the pit of his fears. It's an hour and a half from anywhere anyone would ever want to be.
Perfect.
And of course, on my weekly show, Chilpack Hollywood Hour, we have made a drinking game in its honor. Every time the town of Turlock gets mentioned, you are to imbibe. So...
And then, of course, ahead of President Biden's election, obviously his winning election, we actually have, you're in D.C., I believe.
Yes, I will be in Detroit working with Dean leading up to it, and then on election day expecting that this country will erupt in violence. I am going to make my way from Michigan, where there are militias, where they do plan things like kidnapping and assassinating governors, and I'll drive to the nation's capital, where I can hide out in my stepmother's, my mother-in-law's house. So,
Jessica, are you at all concerned by this, or is it a case of I'm in North Carolina, I'm immune?
Yeah, I guess I'm kind of just, I'm interested to see how it's all just going to play out. I just want to see what's going to happen. I'm sure the doomsday preppers are getting ready. Well, so
I've got to say, though, Phil was absolutely right. I mean, the lighting now, it's almost as though you're a scene from a biblical epic. You know, it's almost as though we actually had rays and all sorts of things together. It's awesome. It's great.
Hope we need.
Yes.
So very briefly, Louis, how can people actually access the winners or indeed the fun things that you're doing in Germany at present?
If they go to Silber Stelz -Festival, SilberSalz-Festival.com. Some of it is online, but otherwise you've got to come to Germany. But we'll be putting some more some shorts up soon. And in fact, I'm showing a short I've just produced in this package as well. We wrapped 2 days before lockdown. And we managed to get everything done post-grade and everything else, had the film finished about 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. So we're showing that soon. But we'll start making some announcements soon about the things you can see online.
To be precise, the Silbersalz Science and Media Festival, Silbersalz Festival, Silbersalz-Festival.com, and magical things will ensue. Yes, yeah. They will. Sorry, I was almost feeling a Dr. Strangelove moment coming up from that point of view, but I'll hold it back, really, because, you know, sometimes you can just go too far. And George, in terms of when we can next see some of your... Sorry, you were fading out there, Louis, by the moment. I know it's astonishing, but George, when's the next time we can access your magical things?
So I've got a monthly comic that's coming out at the moment called Engine Wars. So issue 4 is due shortly, a couple of weeks' time. And then Broken Things, I think, is scheduled for December. They're probably the next couple of things in the pipeline. Lots of things happening next year as well.
And how wonderfully ironic that Broken Things come out after the US presidential election. Amazing. It's like, you know,
it's like we planned it.
Like algae and marsupials, a whole genius range of things in there. Jessica, I'm going to ask you to put those last two questions to the team. Off you go, selecting whomever you wish to go to first. Although, bearing in mind, in Louis' case, we might have a few minutes before we get the sort of the fine feedback through. Anyway, that's the joy of bandwidth. Carry on. Jessica.
George, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer link with us today?
I certainly have, yes.
Fantastic. And Phil, have you also had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
I've had an interesting telephonic link, Jessica, and I want you to know I'm looking up on the map Appalachian State University.
Yes! My home.
It's the one with the giant sun and the big shines, and it's like the Sunshine State but a new version.
There we go.
I'm planning road trip routes right now.
Oh, you have to see the Blue Ridge Parkway. You have to. Beautiful.
Is that what they call you? Is that your nickname?
Louis, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer link with us today?
Yes, very interesting, as always.
Awesome.
Never long enough.
Well, I think the bottom line is we will hopefully put that right in the not too distant future, even though, as I keep getting the line, Louis Savvy's network bandwidth is low. It's not Louis's network bandwidth. It's Germany. You know, it's a problem. It's the Germans. They haven't got it sorted out yet. What they? Phil Linus, George Mann, Louis Savvy, and Jessica Burtis. Jessica, have you enjoyed your time on the Midweek Drive?
I have. It's been fantastic. And I have sweet tea now. So it's ended all well. And I'm glad I got to see you.
I was going to ask, was it sweet tea that you were consuming?
Yes, it is.
Genuine sweet tea. Which, George, if you're unfamiliar with sweet tea, Jessica, it's best described as tea, but with lots of sugar, yes?
Yep, a ton of sugar, as much as you can.
You know, in the South, you know, one of the ways you know you're in the South is they call sweet tea.
It's the only kind of tea.
And in the UK. In the UK.
I'm drinking biscuit tea, which
it's
is...
all tea.
Biscuit tea that tastes as though you've had a malted milk biscuit dipped in it.
Ooh.
Very nice. It's very nice.
Coming up shortly, William Sitwell will be telling us once again how the optimum buff biscuit for dunking is in fact the ginger nut. And he's still actually coming to terms with various other bits and pieces. I think it's 2.75 seconds that's the optimum dunking time. But that's by the by. Louis Savvy, Phil Leonis, Jessica Burtis, George Mann, huge thanks. Keep on keeping on. And bye for now.
Bye.
Good to see you all. Good to see you all.
Time for another Zoomer on the Midweek Drive for Siren Radio and southsidebroadcasting.podbeam.com, keeping the COVID-19 bugs at bay.
It's fair to say that in the light of recent government announcements and so on, we're still faced with a potential nightmare when it comes to the hospitality industry. And to talk us through some of the key things with respect to the true impact of the pandemic, we're delighted to welcome to the programme two awesome individuals. First of all, that legendary television mixologist and general all-round wonderful pub owner, it's the fantastic Merlin Griffiths. How are you, Merlin?
Oh, very good, Alex. How are you? Thank you for having me.
Very good indeed. And good to see you for a change, Merlin, because it's entirely past, we've just used the telephonic device. Here we are, Zoom. It's a whole new world.
It is a whole new world. I'm rather loving it. This is a great way of communicating. Still doesn't beat loads of customers face to face, but this is brilliant.
that's very true. And also from Smart Energy GB, we're also delighted to welcome Head of Public Affairs there, Fleur Lawton. How are you, Fleur?
Good morning. I'm fine. Thank you very much.
Excellent. Merlin, just talk us through some of the sort of challenges with respect to this, because, you know, clearly customers not being able to actually go in from that point of view, we're heading towards the festive period, traditionally a huge sort of strength in terms of hospitality and so on. And yet, as I say, we're almost facing within hospitality a potential Armageddon here.
It's difficult, isn't it? Honestly, as a trade, we really have been getting it since March. And I think by now we're getting used to ways of managing it. But that doesn't make it any easier. You're right. I mean, in this survey, we've got, you know, there's a quarter of us that are worried we're not going to get past Christmas. There's declining consumer confidence, a big worry. There's less money being spent. But somehow we're proving very resilient.
That's the word which I think has probably replaced unprecedented as a classic, really. We are resilient as opposed to unprecedented times. Now, this particular study that you put together with Smart Energy GB, of course, as you mentioned, nearly three quarters of staff of small hospitality business owners have suffered a negative impact on their finances. Is it a case of thinking round the problem? I mean, we've heard today that, you know, one way in terms of Liverpool, for instance, which is obviously under the maximum set of a lockdown, is to maybe consider actually serving food and become a restaurant, and the alcohol is a byproduct of that. Or is that just a case of we're almost heading towards prohibition, really, and actually saying, well, it's not a speakeasy, it's something completely different?
Oh, I don't know. There are so many issues around this. I'll be honest with you on one side here. back when lockdown first started, one of the first things that I did when I looked at my business was go, hold on a minute. Yes, I'm a pub. Okay, so traditionally we serve food and we serve drink. What else can I be? All of a sudden, I'm not looking at my site as a pub anymore. I'm looking at it as a commercial site with A3 planning. What can I do to control what goes on here? Because so much of this situation is out of our control, I think. And that's one of the really important things. Will it keep your head above water? Will it ensure your future? This is down to the individual business. I just don't know. And I don't think there are any easy answers to that. But one of the things you can do as a business owner to sort of really get your head back in the game is take these brutal looks at your business. Be open and start having conversations about rent with your landlord. Look after your staff. They're so important. I think all of us have been. And then utilities is one of the other things I was looking at there and how I can control costs there too.
Which is a wonderful, effortless segue to Fleur Lawton for people who are actually saying, so why is Fleur on this particular call? And Fleur, time to actually come in like a superheroine now. And in terms of Smart Energy GB, the sort of strategy that you're putting together, talk to us about how this can also provide some free advice to pub owners who are actually saying, well, how do we actually reduce our energy costs, for instance?
Yeah, absolutely. So part of what we've done with this project is bring together a guide called Hospitality, Take Time, Take Control. And it's about getting peers in the hospitality industry to share their tips on actually what makes a difference. And you've heard Merlin sort of talk about some of them recently. It's about sort of identifying little things that you can do in this time of uncertainty to help you get a bit more control over what's happening to you as well. And sort of as part of the research that came out, you know, more than 4 in 5 said that having more certainty about their sort of estimated costs and their sort of bills coming through, including energy, would really help them to feel more in control. And that's one of the simple things that smart meters can actually do for you. They can help you get more control over your electricity and your gas bills. So basically, they tell you in real time sort of how much you're using, how much you're spending. You get an accurate bill from that as well. And it makes your energy more visible and helps you be more in control.
And Merlin, from your own perspective, that could only be good news, I would have thought, if you're running a business and you do want to, certainly micromanaging, but at least kind of ensuring that you're not wasting energy unnecessarily.
No, you're absolutely right, Alex. I mean, you know, you say micromanaging, but right now, marginal gains are everything. They really honestly can make a difference between being here tomorrow. You know, at the moment, we're in a case of, I always have said that every day I could open my doors in business, I thank my lucky stars, but now more so than ever. And this idea of really looking very, very tightly at your cost control. Trim, it's rigorous trimming of the fat. And it's a hard process, but it's something that has to be done if we're going to get through this. But as I say, you know, we're resilient, we're creative, we're diverse, and we're capable. And I think you'll see hospitality come through this.
Okay. This is clearly what we need. You need to actually sort of have a second career, Merlin, as well as a mixologist. You need to be a cheerleader for the whole thing, because I mean, I'm feeling the energy already now through the whole system, which is great and excellent. And in fact, what advice would you give to somebody who might be listening to this within the hospitality industry and they're thinking, oh, it's all very well for Merlin, but he's already known. What about, you know, X, Y, or Z sort of person? Is it a case of look at those small aspects and again, evaluate the best way forward?
Well, yes, there's that. And honestly, some of the crazy ideas you might have had over the years, do you know, you sit there as a business owner sometimes, right? And you go, oh, wouldn't it be great if we did this? Or how about if we did that? I'd say go back and revisit those ideas. They probably might not be so crazy right now. They really might not. You know, there's relaxations on trade and planning restrictions and things that you can and can't do with business premises. There's different ways of engaging and connecting with your communities that support your business as well. And stuff that you might have thought have gone, I'll put that on the back burner because I generally don't really have the time for it. You're under restricted hours in trading now. You probably do have the time for it. So go back and seriously look at those, because we did. And I found one or two of them have actually taken off and they've been fantastic and really good for us.
Personally, I'm waiting for the Merlin Griffiths mixology Smart GB number. You may have already concocted this, basically. I'm just wondering whether that would be something we could actually sort of use to synthesize both of those elements, you know, Smart GB, smart energy, and the wonderful world of mixology. Would be a thought, perhaps.
Exactly. I'll take that under advisement. That sounds like a great idea. Smart.
Fleur, would you sample that? Would you sort of?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It sounds great.
Okay. Fleur, where can people go to find out further information about what we've been chatting about today in terms of smart energy meters and so on?
So you can find the guide that we talked about and information on smart meters at smartenergygb.org. And if you're interested in getting a smart meter, then please contact your energy supplier to talk about whether you're eligible.
Fantastic. We'll put two final questions to you. There are kind of customer satisfaction ones. Have you both had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the program today? Merlin?
I've loved it, Alex. Thank you. Yes, no, it's been lovely speaking to you. Thank you.
Excellent. And Fleur, good for you as well?
It's been great. Thank you, Alex.
Splendid. That's the smiley faces. It's customer satisfaction. It's the world of the 21st century. I take it that we'll be able to connect with you again in the not-too-distant future. You will both return.
Absolutely.
Lovely. Thank you.
Well, we've covered over the past few weeks a whole range of issues relating to lockdown, relating to COVID, and a variety of other key things as well. However, there are still challenges with respect to fraud online, and indeed difficulties related to that as well. And people are actually falling victim to that, which is unacceptable. So we're delighted to bring on board a superheroine to actually deal with this from Crime Stoppers, of course, the awesomely talented Kate Johnston. How are you, Kate?
Good morning, Alex. I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent. Now, the COVID fraud hotline. Sounds great. Share with us, how is it going to work?
Yeah, thanks, Alex. The Crime Stoppers COVID fraud hotline has been set up in partnership with the government, and it's going to collect anonymous information on fraudsters who are targeting the COVID stimulus schemes, including all the loans and grants that have been made available. The information that we receive at Crime Stoppers is then going to be processed and passed on to the COVID fraud response teams for them to investigate and take further action.
And yeah, I think most of us have encountered some form of online attempts to actually fish our details out or sort aspects relating to that. I was intrigued to actually find that there are three key aspects that kind of relate to COVID fraud. Obviously, unusual business activity coming into place with respect to where those checks and balances would actually come into place. Presumably, the banks would normally sort out that, though, with multi-factor identification and authentication that we're all used to these days.
Yeah, I think there's lots of checks and balances in place from the government put in place, the banks have put in place. There are lots of checks and balances there, but unfortunately, that fraudsters are very adept at overcoming these checks and balances. So it's the people that are committing these fraudulent activities that Crime Stoppers wants to hear about via its Crime Stoppers COVID fraud hotline.
Exactly. And cold calling, of course, certainly to vulnerable folk within the population. And to a large extent, probably we're all vulnerable at one way, shape or form, because no matter how savvy we might think we actually are, it's astounding how well or how sophisticated, perhaps we should say, cold calls can actually be in terms of pretending to be part of an authentic bank, a detail sort of organisation, etc. And obviously requesting personal details.
Absolutely. And I'd urge anyone that receives a call that they think is suspicious not to give out any of those personal details, but instead to call the Crime Stoppers COVID fraud hotline 24/7, 365 days a year on 0800 587 5030.
Has COVID exacerbated these challenges? I mean, has it been a case of, as we've all been into lockdown, out of lockdown, back into partial lockdown, back into full lockdown, wherever you happen to be in the country, has this been something which, in a sense, the criminal element have actually said, there's an opportunity here, let's actually jump on the back of the COVID virus?
Of course. I think whenever there's an opportunity or whenever anything changes in society, criminals always try and find a way to commit their acts. So criminals have adapted very well to targeting COVID fraud stimulus schemes. So we would urge people that, you know, to contact the independent charity Crime Stoppers COVID fraud hotline if they've got any information about said criminals.
And it's worth noting, as you've just rightly alluded to there, that if people were contacted by an organisation or an individual claiming they could provide assistance with gaining a government grant or loan and so on, be very careful, because I'm sure that Rishi Sunak would be most upset to actually find that these malevolent folk are actually out there. But regrettably, they are.
And, you know, let's not forget, all the schemes that are announced by our government have helped hundreds of thousands of people, you know, be able to put food on the table, to, you know, stay in their homes. So it's been hugely successful for many, many hundreds of thousands of people. And unfortunately, it's a small minority that have not behaved properly and have committed fraud. And it's those people that we want to hear about.
Absolutely. COVIDfraudhotline.org, presumably the best place to actually go to find out further details. If people have actually just caught part of this or they want to play back the podcast again, that would be the first point of contact to actually reach that hotline, presumably.
People can call us 24/7, 365 days a year on 0800 587 5030, or they can fill in our simple and secure anonymous form at covidfraudhotline.org.
It couldn't be simpler. And again, I think you might have solved an awful lot of challenges and people feeling understandably quite concerned with respect to that. Kate, it's been fantastic connecting with your good self. We've got two final questions to put to you. Nothing too traumatic, but have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the programme today?
I have. It's been fabulous. Thank you.
Well, then the next critical question is, will you join us again in the not too distant future? Can we prevail upon you to actually keep us abreast of Crime Stoppers information and more? Will you come back, Kate?
I'd be delighted to do so, Alex.
Now, it's fair to say that when people started thinking about 5G over the last few months, maybe it was a case of don't burn that mast down. It's not there for, you know, some pandemic reason. Of course it isn't. But who better to actually start beginning to demystify this whole thing? In fact, somebody who should surely have been brought on board by the government far sooner to actually develop this whole sort of process, because she is a superheroine. We're always delighted to welcome her to the programme. It's the awesome Susie Perry. How are you, Susie?
Oh my goodness me, I can't possibly live up to that. Thank you very much. I'm very well. Nice to talk to you.
Well, likewise. It's also a nice change to actually sort of go via Zoom as opposed to the old traditional phone links we used to do. But there we are. You know, that's technology for you. 5G, let's just break it down in terms of, well, obviously it's one more than 4G, but it is designed to obviously be an asset to us as opposed to a hindrance in our everyday work, presumably.
Yeah, absolutely. I think two words can sum up 5G: speed and connectivity. Those are the two things to remember. 5G has been around for a while, and I think we've been talking about it in various different guises, as you have said, for some time now. EE were sort of pioneers in the UK. They rolled it out just over a year ago. Apple have kind of delayed the launch of this iPhone. They've been talking to hardware and software companies to make sure that everybody's on the same page. And yes, they've rolled it out now, and here it is. So what will 5G do for us? Well, I think the key advantages are high capacity and low latency. So essentially what that means is that you'll get super fast speeds, even if you're in a crowded area, like a football match or a pop concert or a station or an airport, something like that, where everybody's trying to connect online and it's glitchy and you can't send things and it drives you mad. That will open up and enable you to be able to use your phone to its full capacity. And low latency essentially means that you'll get an almost instant connection, which is really great for gamers. So you'll get console quality gaming on the go on your phone. And last night Apple launched they launched League of Legends coming to the iPhone, so you know that's quite significant really. So we're going to have faster uploads, faster downloads, high definition video, all in your hand on your phone.
Which again sounds absolutely wonderful. I had to admit though, Susie, smiling slightly when you're talking about in crowded environments, that's not going to happen these days, not for a long time. You step away.
I should have really said, remember when we could go to football matches.
Exactly. Yeah. Socially distanced and all sorts of other areas on that sign.
However, having said that, we are all on our phones even more now because of the connection, because during lockdown we wanted to video our friends and family and stay in touch. So we were consuming masses and masses of data. Even if we can't hug each other, you know, we are still using our phones, aren't we?
I mean, I'm fascinated, of course, from the point of view of the different versions of reality. We've had the virtual reality, of course, we've got augmented reality, we've got all areas with respect to that. As you know, Susie, I've had this long-held ambition that ultimately we want to have a Susie Perry avatar that will basically give us advice on tech on a regular basis, even if you're really saying, don't press that button there, that'd be really wonderful. But, I mean, are we getting to that stage whereby we've also got a very sort of tech-based society, and is there a digital divide where people actually sometimes feel it's a bit difficult to catch up with all of this? I know with the students I'm working with at the University of Lincoln, as we've moved into a blended learning environment and we've got your collaborates, we've got your Teams, we've got your Zooms and so on, sometimes they get a little bit confused, even now that registers on a paper-based register are a thing of the past. They're all registering online.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, I'm this morning talking about this. I've got people connecting from all different devices on different platforms. And, you know, I'm wishing that everybody used exactly the same thing as well. So I definitely hear you. I think the key to technology is to just literally take it one bit, excuse the terminology, at a time. Just, you know, learn one thing at a time and use and learn what you need to, what you want to. Instead of looking at everything as a whole and thinking, gosh, augmented reality, virtual reality, how am I going to use that? It seems so complicated. There's so much going on. Mm-hmm. Actually, it comes to us in bite-sized pieces. It comes to us quite slowly. And we tend to find the things that we like and the things that we like using. And, you know, nobody uses all forms of technology. That would be ridiculous.
Not even you, yeah. Susie, surely. I mean,
definitely not. No, I'm not a gamer, you see, Alex. I mean, the gaming thing leaves me a little bit cold. On the gadget show, I mean, I used to do a lot of that kind of stuff, and I just found it a waste of my life, gaming. I'm just really not a gamer. So I don't enter into that part of life. I would honestly rather go for a walk. However, I do use my device enormously for other things. And I like that. I like the fact that technology now, I mean, we call it a phone. Hardly anybody uses it as a phone now, do they? Mm. You know, because apps came along and completely took over our lives. But in a lot of ways, made them so much better, made things so much easier. And the only thing I don't like is the fact that you are available all the time unless you switch your phone off. So I think there's also, you know, that should also happen as well. I'm a geek. I love gadgets. I love technology. But it is important to go, right, I'm done now, switching off, going to do something, going in the garden, putting my hands in the soil, going for a walk, going to play with the dog, the cat, whatever it is, that's also really important.
Absolutely. The importance of a digital detox, which is something we've argued for in the past. Of course, I'd have to say, in terms of gaming, Susie, I'm amazed that they don't have a Susie Perry character in the Legends game, because surely it's essential. I mean, it's, you know, they need to put that right, you know, straight away.
I think, Alex, I'll get on to Boris and see if we can do a pocket version, a little pocket. You can just get out and ask, and I will help you with things.
Exactly. Ask Susie. It's there. just a reminder, of course, the iPhone 12, of course, is now out there, the highly anticipated Apple event. And I'm sure it'll see you can take a bite out of Apple. I couldn't resist it, but what the heck. And indeed go into all sorts of other wonderful things. Where would you point folks, Susie, if they want to find out more about what we've been chatting about today in terms of 5G? And also, of course, finding out whether their area is still actually connected with 5G, because there are parts of the UK that still will be saying, no, it's not really quite up to speed yet.
Yeah, there is. It's the start. I think it's important to make that point. EE, I think, have covered 112 towns and cities at the moment, and that will obviously get much more. So you can go and have a look at the EE website or Apple to see how you can get connected.
Just looking at some of the figures here, according to Ofcom, that the average British soul checks their phone every 12 minutes, and the average amount of mobile data used per month in 2019 was 3.56 gigabytes, which shows an ever-increasing line from that point of view. We've moved on a long way, Susie, from the days where we used to have the dial-up connection for internet things. Just imagine how long Zoom would take if we were using one of those things. You're probably too young to remember. What the heck?
We've moved on such a long way, and I remember launching the first iPhone when I was on the Gadget Show back in the early 2000s, and we were comparing it to a phone that had physical buttons. We'd never used apps before, so, you know, it really has come on leaps and bounds, and it's extraordinary. I suppose you do get the odd conspiracy theory here and there, but I think, you know, just going back to how you introduced this, I think people thought that the 5G was going to roll out on mmWave, which is millimeter wave, a kind of military frequency, if you like, but it's so much lower than that. In fact, it's lower than what we use for Wi-Fi, so there's no worries there.
Thank you for assuaging the concern from that point of view, Susie. Absolutely spot on. Two final questions. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the program today?
Absolutely.
Excellent. So can we prevail upon you to join us once again in the not too distant future and connect for more Perry magic?
I would love to. I can't think of anything better. Thank you, Alex.
You see, this is one of the reasons, Susie, why I would actually say it's not former presenter of The Gadget Show. It's the best presenter The Gadget Show ever had, ever, Susie Perry. Susie, fantastic stuff. Take care. Have a great day. Speak soon. Bye for now.
Thank you very much. Goodbye.